This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the links and show notes right there. Thanks to Whiskey Fever for letting us use the track Their Tall Grass. Go check them out over at ReverbNation.com/WhiskeyFever. Never held your hand, but of course. Next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
Hi, I'm Lisa Holmes. I live in Portland, Oregon, but I'm originally from Kansas City, Missouri, and I've been in Portland for about 10 years now.
Nice. Well, I love your website name, I Heart Pacific Northwest. When did you come up with that?
Well, it's not the first name that my hiking website had. It actually started as a blog on Blogspot. Back when I moved to Portland, I wanted a way to share my new home with friends and family back in the Midwest. So on the 1,800-mile drive during our move, I had a really bad cold and I was really bored. I hate long car rides, So I shot photos from the passenger seat of the car, and we didn't stop at all for these. We just kept driving, and I kept taking photos of the landscape of all these places I'd never been through. And by the time we reached Portland, I had over 400 photos, and I wanted to share them with my friends and family. So I decided to start a blog, and the name that I used at the time was Isn't She, which was a play on a psychedelic fur song, Pretty in Pink, inspired by my favorite photo from that entire long move, and it was my dog Cricket in her little pink harness sitting in the back seat with a big smile on her face during this, you know, long trek across the U.S. So that's where that name came from. But after I was here, it didn't take long at all before I turned it into a hiking blog, and I felt a need to rename it. So the next name I had was I Heart Oregon. I was completely focused on Oregon at the time. And so I felt like that covered it, but I couldn't get the URL, iheartoregon.com. I could only get .us. The guy who owned .com was sitting on it, and he was trying to make a lot of money off of it, and I didn't want to pay him. And I also had started hiking in Washington a lot more, so I really love the sound of the Pacific Northwest because it says so many things. For me, it includes the ocean and, you know, all of Oregon and all of Washington. So I decided to go for that, and the URL was available. So nice. I changed it.
Well, I like the Pacific Northwest too.
It's awesome.
So on your website, I saw that you've published some books. One of your books, I Heart the Seven Wonders of Oregon. What gave you the idea to write that book?
Well, the idea actually came from Travel Oregon's Seven Wonders marketing campaign. They were working with Wyden and Kennedy on this, and they'd been promoting Oregon in a way that was really different, and it was wildly successful. At the time, I was leading hiking trips through Meetup, and people I hiked with talked about wanting to do hikes in each one of the Seven Wonders. So I thought, hey, that's a really good idea for a book, you know, mainly for people who especially might be from out of town, and they come here and they want to go visit the Seven Wonders. It gives them hikes in every one of them. And in case you don't know, the Seven Wonders are the Oregon coast, the entire coast, Mount Hood, the Columbia River Gorge, Smith Rock, the Painted Hills, Crater Lake, and the Wallowas.
Well, I know most of those. What are the Painted Hills?
The Painted Hills are in kind of central Oregon, and they're just this tiny part of the John Day National Monument. And the Painted Hills have these, they're basically like these big rounded mounds, and they are banded with color in a really unique way. The whole area is very, very important in terms of geology and fossils. The amount of fossils that are found throughout that region is actually not, their concentration for one particular era is more than anywhere else in the whole world. And I didn't know that before I started on that book. So it actually taught me a lot about all the different areas.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, I Heart Oregon and Washington, Portland area hikes, Best Hikes is your other book. Tell us, what are the highlights of that book?
Well, that was my first hiking book, and it was really meant to be kind of a primer on the area. It only has 25 hikes covered in it, and it's all centered around the Portland area, but not in Portland. So Mount Hood, the coast, Southwest Washington, a little bit down towards Mount Jefferson, like Opal Creek area. And the idea for that was it's a very visual book. It has over 400 color photos, and it has a custom map for every hike. So it really would appeal to people who are a little bit newer to hiking.
And it's kind of like some of the better hikes around that area then, too?
Yeah, a lot of them are already pretty well known, but they're covered in a different way than they are in other hiking books.
Yeah, with the maps, I mean, yeah, that's something you don't just... I remember the older hiking books in the area were just kind of like hand-drawn maps and stuff, so you got more detail than that?
Yeah, so design is a really important part of my hiking books, and maps are one of the most important things to me, because it's how you're getting around on the trail. And if the map isn't really good, if it's basically just like a flat map that only has these lines on it, and you're not going to be able to tell much about the terrain, then that's not going to be as useful as one where I actually take a topo map that's Forest Service, a USGS map, and I know how to take those apart because I've worked with a lot of engineers over the years and their GIS files, so I know how to take those kind of files apart and get rid of all the stuff I don't want and then add things I do want. And I think it's really important to have the topo lines on there so that you get a sense of the terrain, like where the slopes are, where it's more flat, that kind of stuff. And then I also really wanted to add a lot of features to maps that aren't normally on them, like not only show where the waterfalls are, but tell you what the names of them all are and put mileage from point to point, add where the viewpoints are, that kind of stuff.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you got quite a history there with getting into those programs and tearing them apart. What's your history with all that?
Well, I've been a graphic designer my entire career. I went to art school and I majored in design and a little bit in photography. And I've been doing client work my entire career, especially website design. That's mainly what I do. But I've also done a lot of publication design, like newsletters and magazines and brochures and things like that. And I've done hundreds of maps for clients. So you put all that together, that's kind of all the elements needed in a hiking book. So it was kind of a natural progression.
Perfect. Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, I have to check your books out for sure. I don't live in Portland, but I like books in general. So, and especially ones that are about hiking. So that's perfect. What about your on-trail riding habits?
Well, on backpacking trips, I do take a little memo book. It's just a little kind that's like 3 by 5 inches and spiral bound at the top. They're really cheap. They're super lightweight and they're easy to write in. So every night when it's time to basically go to your tent and go to bed, I sit up and I journal for a while, kind of making notes about everything that I did that day. When I'm hiking, though, I don't write at all. I'm really busy taking photos when I'm hiking. I take, on a typical day hike, I might shoot 100 to 200 photos, and on a backpacking trip, I could easily top 500 photos. So I'm much more focused on documenting that way. And then I also carry a GPS device so I can get tracks for the maps that I create. And then I use my GPS to add waypoints for anything that I want to remember. And then when I get home, I download the photos and the tracks, and that's when I actually do the writing, is when I'm back at home. So, but when I'm backpacking, I do really like to have the little memo book because it's too hard to remember stuff, you know, multiple days.
Well, and you're talking about very finite details that you're trying to cover in the book too. So, you know, I've talked about it before with some other guidebook authors I've interviewed, and I can just, as someone that's not trying to write about the trail, I can recall twists and turns of the trails from years and years back, but to be able to sit there and write about it in a detailed fashion, I can imagine you'd have to write some of that down.
Yeah, you do, but you'd be surprised how much taking a ton of photos helps with that too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because you can basically relive the entire hike through all the photos.
So what about your photos? What are you using to shoot with?
My current camera is a Pentax KS2. And it's my third camera I've had since I started using it to document hikes, because I'm really good at breaking cameras. So this one, yeah, I've broken 2 Nikons, and it doesn't take much for me to break them. You know, you fall once and a camera can be gone. That's happened to me once. And another time, my husband was helping me unload the car when I got back, and he didn't know my pack and the camera were sitting side by side. He pulled the pack out and the camera bounced off of the driveway. So it was a goner. But my current camera is a little bit smaller. It is a DSLR. I've been thinking about actually trying to lighten my weight a little bit and go with maybe a mirrorless. So I'm kind of checking those out, but they're pretty expensive. So I think I might stick with what I have for a while.
What about your editing process? What program do you use?
I use Lightroom, which is an Adobe product. Because I'm a designer, I use all Adobe software. So I already am paying for their full suite of everything they have. And Lightroom is really what all professional photographers use. There's nothing better for being able to organize all of your photos. And in the 10 years that I've been here, I have over 27,000 photos just from my hikes. So that's a lot to keep track of. And so in Lightroom, I will download all my photos and then I put keywords on things. I organize everything, of course, by the hike and then by the date, because I'll do a hike, you know, on multiple times, but I want to separate them all for exactly each one I did. And then I add all my keywords I want, like waterfalls, wildflowers, or the names of specific things. And then I can set up some presets for exporting those for various uses, like for social media, for my blog, for my books. There's some nice ways to set up presets in there to kind of help automate some of those processes. Plus, it is where I do all of the touch-up on my images rather than using Photoshop for that.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I was really surprised when I interviewed somebody that you might know, Eli Borchetto.
Yeah.
And he's coming out with a new book, Hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in Oregon. And he mentioned the exact camera styles that you're saying. He went with a DSLR. Then he stepped down to a mirrorless. And actually, through Mountaineer Books, he ended up submitting quite a few photos for his books that he shot from his smartphone. Now, as somebody with your experience, what do you think about that? Because you're the one that's actually laying these down.
Well, I found out that a smartphone can work, but it wasn't because I wanted to find that out. It was because I actually forgot my camera on a trip.
Oh, no.
I know. I was devastated when I realized I'd forgotten it. So I was stuck using my my smartphone, and it did okay. But for me, there's still nothing like being able to control the settings, and a smartphone just can't really do everything that I want to do with it. I shoot everything in RAW format, so that means that when I come back, I can actually make more changes to an image if I want to. And my goal whenever I am modifying an image is really to make it look like it looked when I saw it, because a lot of times what the camera sees isn't exactly how I saw it, and so my goal is always to make it look more realistic rather than less. So I don't want it to look like something that could be a painting necessarily, although a lot of places that we go to are certainly beautiful. I like the kind of photography that's actually more documentary rather than artistic in style, if that makes sense.
If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please give it a rating. I would love to hear your feedback on there, and yeah, it helps the show out quite a bit. Hey, thanks a lot. Listeners, I got you a deal at Rivertime Brewery in Darrington, Washington. That's right. Tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you, and you get $1 off your first pint. If you're up there hiking or just driving through town, stop in and tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you. They just won the bronze medal at the Washington Beer Awards for their Scottish beer. So after a hike, enjoy a pint. And their slogan says, beer at an appropriate pace. Rivertime Brewery is located in downtown Darrington, Washington, in the old City Hall building there. Can't miss it. So next time you're in there, remember, don't forget to tell them the Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you and get that dollar off the first pint. Of course, you got to be over 21. We are hikertrash.com. They got some awesome hats, shirts, stickers. They even got temporary tattoos. They got women's t-shirts, men's t-shirts. They even have wallets. Hiker Trash is a really cool name. The meaning just really brings hikers together. Hiker Trash is a community. You see somebody on the trail that's another hiker trash, and you just know that they've been through some stuff. They've been out on the trail. So go check out the hats and shirts. Really great company, really quality stuff. We are hikertrash.com. No, I completely understand. I know there's constantly a dichotomy between those two, but like the rivers that are all blurred out and that kind of thing. So is that kind of what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yes. So, for example, I'm not taking a tripod and I'm not spending a lot of time for every single shot because I'm taking way too many. And if I did that, I'd never finish the hike. So I'm basically just, I'm hiking along and I have this special carrier on my hip belt for my camera to sit in. So it's around my neck, but then I just basically can drop it back into this bag that holds it. And then I can just pick it back up with one hand, shoot, drop it, pick it back up, shoot, etc. Because there's no other way to get as many photos as you need. And like I said, I really don't have time to stop at that waterfall, set up the tripod and all of that stuff to get that kind of a shot.
Yeah, no, it's completely understandable. Well, what about your books themselves? So who do you publish your books through?
I publish them all through my own graphic design company, which is Yulan Studio. That's Y-U-L-A-N. It's actually a Chinese magnolia tree. That's the origin of that name, Yulan, due to my interest in Asian culture. But since books are really a form of publishing and they require design, for me it made a lot of sense to do those through my own company. So I wouldn't have to set up something else to handle all of the things that are required when you do publishing. Like, you know, when you're making money off of anything, then you have to turn that in to the IRS. And so you've got to have some kind of a business entity and you have to pay taxes. And all of that stuff is already set up through my graphic design company. And really, for me, these projects are an extension of what I already do for clients because the focus is so much more on design than it is on writing. So it just makes a lot of sense to do it that way.
Yeah, well, and you're going to get the product that you want. There's nobody standing over you saying, well, maybe we should do this.
Yeah, exactly. I did spend a lot of time trying to determine whether or not I was going to self-publish or if I was going to try to find a publisher for my book. But really the main reason I decided to self-publish was that control factor. It was really important to me that the design be a certain way because that was, for me, that was the whole reason for the book. I actually started doing these books as a, what I call a passion project. So it was a way for me to do my own design project. And it was a way for me to tie in my love of hiking, which is my absolute favorite thing to do, with my career of graphic design. And I was serving on the board of a professional design association for 6 years. And when it was time for me to roll off of that position, which was basically like a second full-time job, I knew I was going to have a lot of time on my hands. And I knew it would be the time that I could finally do my own project. And so I was thinking about what to do. And I had a lot of friends telling me I should turn my blog into a book. But what they really meant was my photos and turn it into like a coffee table kind of book. And I felt like my photos, they're not like that. They're not those kind of photos. They're more like the documentary style, like we talked about. And so I thought, well, what about a hiking book? You know, I love hiking books. I own most of the ones that exist for the area. So I really had to ask myself, you know, do we need another one? And what would be different? And so that was when I came up with the idea for, you know, a much more visual book, a design project, if you will, that would do what I felt wasn't really represented very well yet. I think a lot of publishers are trying to move more in that direction, but at the time they really weren't. Like for a book that only has 25 hikes, it has over 400 photos. That's really unheard of.
Wow.
For most hiking
yeah.
books. So that was kind of the idea behind that.
Yeah. And when you kind of to jump back a little bit, when you were talking about the freedom to do what you want by publishing it yourself, I can completely relate with my media because here I am podcasting almost like a radio on the internet would be kind of a term for it. But I don't have anybody telling me, no, you can't interview that person. You can't say that on your podcast. You know, so I can definitely relate and completely understand why you're doing that.
Yeah. And with design, you know, the publishers usually control that. They don't usually give the author any control over the design at all. And I knew that. And so I knew that if design is important and if I want to do it all, which I did all of the writing, all of the design, all of the maps, all the photography, the publishing, and then I got to decide where do I want this book to be carried. And so I did all the marketing and I actually do the distribution too. It just gives you so much more control. And for someone who's been self-employed for as long as I have, I've had my graphic design company since 1999. I think I must work better for myself than I do for others. And I'm highly self-motivated, but maybe not as motivated when I have to do it for others other than clients. It's kind of a different, it's different. And so I figured, you know, I've been doing this graphic design self-employed thing for a long time. I figured I could probably handle the self-publishing too.
Absolutely. Well, what are you working on next? Do you have any other books that you're kind of working on that might be new?
I do. I plan to just keep doing books for as long as I can, and I'm currently working on two books. And on these, I'm actually going to be teaming with some other people for the first time on the books. I have one that I'm working on that is a How to Get Started Backpacking book that's half how-to info, and that's where the teaming comes in. I'm working with a woman who actually taught me how to do backpacking. So I helped her set up a series of How to Get Started Backpacking classes for a meetup group that was a six-month series. And so she's going to write that part, and then half of the book is going to be backpacking trips in Oregon and Washington, and I'm doing that part as well as the design of the whole book. And then the next book I'm working on is a cookbook for backpackers on how to make your own dehydrated meals. I'm a really picky eater, and I've always made all of my own food for backpacking. I've never even tried any of the commercial stuff that's out there. I'm afraid that I wouldn't like it and I wouldn't eat, and then I probably would suffer. And, you know, I don't really like to suffer, so
yeah.
I decided to make my own food. And as I was doing that, I've reviewed a lot of backpacking cookbooks, and so many of them just do things I don't like. They might use a lot of, you know, TVP, which is a really processed, it's textured vegetable protein. Or they might use, like, they're making fruit leather. They would add high fructose corn syrup. It's like, I don't believe in that kind of stuff. So, again, I'm kind of like, you know, do it yourself. But I have a friend who's also really into cooking, and we're both making meals. And so we're going to team together on that one.
Nice. What's their name?
Her name is Sanjana. She's from India originally. So this book is going to have a lot more ethnic type food in it than most would. So fewer chili mac and more curries.
Oh, that sounds great. Oh, man. Well, and then as far as your other book you were talking about too, with the backpacking,
yeah,
it sounds really cool. So you're not only going to kind of introduce people how to backpack, but you're going to give them some options also.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to highlight 10 easy to moderate backpacking trips, which is what I spent this year doing. And that book is going to have a lot of emphasis on leave no trace principles, because that is something that people who are new getting into backpacking, those are some things that are really important for them to learn. And I think it's really easy to pick up a book and just see all the trips and not really think about the impact you're having. And that's something that's we're all seeing that a lot more as we go out there. We're seeing a lot more toilet paper and a lot more trash. And I think it's important to educate people. And so I figured this would be a really good way to do that. It's like, yeah, here's some great trips you can go on, but here's a lot of things that you need to think about at the same time.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, your title, I Heart Oregon and Washington Portland Area Hikes, kind of made me wonder, is that something you kind of had planned to maybe do a series with? The way you wrote it on the book, it kind of looked like a subtitle for a series.
Yeah, I think it will. You know, I'm not exactly sure yet. I've thought about what would be next. It's like I Heart Oregon and Washington even more. The Portland area was just so that people would know it was like mainly places you could get to. If you live in Portland, then these are places you could get to within, I would say, like 2 to 3 hours at most, surrounding this area. And I've thought about doing that for just like Southern Washington, because I think that that doesn't really exist, just to focus on that area. So, yeah, you know, I think that everything is going to have be a part of the I Heart Pacific Northwest and continue on from that theme.
Nice. Well, I mean, I love the name, so of course, why wouldn't you? I mean, everybody's got to like that. What about hikes that you've done? What are some of your more favorite, maybe a favorite day trip and a favorite backpack that you can kind of think of?
Well, when I was working on the Seven Wonders book, my favorite trip from that was a backpacking trip in the Wallowas. I had never been there before. It's in northeastern Oregon, and it's part of the Eagle Cap Wilderness. So I did a backpacking trip into the Lakes Basin there, and It's just amazing. It's different from the Cascades. It's really full of granite. So there's a lot of peaks that are around 9,000 foot. There's a lot more of them condensed in a smaller area. And just, you know, having the granite and all the subalpine lakes everywhere, it's just really amazing. For day hiking, I think one of my top favorites has got to be the McNeil Point area on Mount Hood. That's just a really beautiful place.
Well, there's a couple areas I haven't been to, so that's what's fun for me doing these podcasts is to find out, you know, what's out there. I don't get down to that area too often. We took a trip to kind of the little gorge area upriver for Portland and went to Cascade Locks, kind of mulled around there with the family. And, you know, if you're not from there, you don't know what's there. So it's good to find those little things out.
Oh, there's a lot in the gorge. There's a whole lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of people too.
Yeah, there are. It does tend to get pretty crowded. That's one area I don't go to in the summer at all. Way too crowded. Plus summer is when you can be in the alpine places in the mountains. And so the gorge for me is really an area that I save for the rainy times because it's less crowded and there's more water and all those waterfalls and streams. And it's more green, all the moss. It's like really, really mossy and really green.
Yeah, that's really good. And you know, it reminds me too, I was actually just talking about somebody about this today. We have an area like that up north in the Bellingham area called the Chuckanuts. And it's just a ton of hiking trails all throughout. There's miles and miles of hiking trails, but they're open somewhat year round because of the low elevation. And we still have some hikes open right now, even despite some of the snow that's fallen. So get out there when you can. Get out into the mountains, you know, because you're gonna get tired of those Chuckanut trails if you're already starting on them now.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about, we talked about some of your favorite hikes and backpacking trips right now. What about some that are maybe on your to-do list? Not because of work, but because something like you really want to get to them.
Oh, I have a lot of lists. I have to actually have multiple lists. I have so many places I want to go. But, you know, there's one really big area I haven't been to at all that I think you're really familiar with, and that's the North Cascades.
Yes, for sure.
I have not been there yet. And I would love to spend time there. Also, the Olympic Peninsula. I haven't really spent time there. I've only been on a day hike there once, and that's it. So it's two really large areas to explore. The Alpine Lakes Wilderness. So that's a lot of Washington. In Oregon, the Three Sisters area is really beautiful in central Oregon, and I would love to spend a lot more time there too.
Yeah, it's one of the areas I have hiked. Was the Three Sisters with my uncle back in the 90s. did the Pacific Crest Trail through there and got a chance on a separate trip to hike the South Sister. So that was pretty cool. It really is beautiful down there.
Yeah, it is.
And I might mention that as far as the Olympic Peninsula goes, we spent some time out in La Push this last year and kind of along the Washington coast, and it's very comparable to the Oregon coast. The difference is there's not a lot of roads on our coast. And so when you get out there as a hiker yourself, you're going to find that if you ever get a chance to get out there and see the coast of Washington, because it is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I had actually planned to go there this year, and then due to weather, for the time that I had slotted for it, the weather just wasn't any good, so I ended up actually going to the Three Sisters instead. But I really want to experience the Washington coast because it is a lot more wild than the Oregon coast.
Yeah, and it's got the stacks and stuff too. It's pretty good. Might not be a seven wonders, but... So with all these hiking guides, you must have a lifetime of hiking. What got you into hiking and the outdoors?
Well, I had never actually hiked in my life until I moved to Oregon, and I'd never camped either. I'd never really spent much time in the outdoors except at my grandparents' farm in Missouri. You know, there really isn't much hiking in the Midwest. Most of the land surrounding the cities is farmland and pasture, so there's just very little chance to get out and experience hiking there. So when I moved to Oregon, I didn't even know that was going to be something that I was going to love until I moved here. And I had some friends that took me hiking, And it only took going once or twice, and I was just completely hooked, and then, as is my personality, obsessed. I had to just get started doing it as much as I can, and I just fell in love with it. And so I thought I was moving to Portland because I love the city of Portland, but now I find that the thing I love the very most is the mountains, and it's the coast, and it's really being outdoors. And I still like Portland. It's a great city, but given a choice, I'm almost always going to choose to be somewhere in the backcountry.
Yeah, I like that. I can't imagine, though, not growing up hiking. I mean, I'm a Pacific Northwest native, and when you talk about that, it's like, oh, man, these poor people.
Yeah, that was the one thing I wish that I had moved here sooner. If I could have had a chance to do this more of my life, then I just can't even imagine what that would have been like. But I guess I'm here now, so that's where the obsession comes in. I'm like trying to pack it all in as much as I can.
That's good. Yeah. Well, you created a business around it, and that's great.
Yeah.
That's the best way, because then you have to.
Well, I get to, and I love it.
Exactly. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please give it a rating. I would love to hear your feedback on there, and yeah, it helps the show out quite a bit. Hey, thanks a lot. Listeners, I got you a deal at Rivertime Brewery in Darrington, Washington. That's right. Tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you, and you get $1 off your first pint. If you're up there hiking or just driving through town, stop in and tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you. They just won the bronze medal at the Washington Beer Awards for their Scottish beer. So after a hike, enjoy a pint. And their slogan says, beer at an appropriate pace. Rivertime Brewery is located in downtown Darrington, Washington, in the old City Hall building there. Can't miss it. So next time you're in there, remember, don't forget to tell them the Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you and get that $1 off the first pint. Of course, you got to be over 21. We are hikertrash.com. They got some awesome hats, shirts, stickers. They even got temporary tattoos. They got women's t-shirts, men's t-shirts. They even have wallets. Hiker Trash is a really cool name. The meaning just really brings hikers together. Hiker Trash is a community. You see somebody on the trail that's another Hiker Trash, and you just know that they've been through some stuff. They've been out on the trail. So go check out the hats and shirts. Really great company. Really quality stuff. We are hikertrash.com. So you must have bought a ton of backpacking gear in the past couple years since you're kind of just getting into it. What's been your favorite purchase that you kind of say, man, I'm never getting rid of this?
Okay, so that would be my backpacking chair. I have to say that's a real game changer for me because I'm a really small person. I'm only 5'1". And since I had never been much of a outdoorsy person before, you know, I'm not as strong as a lot of people who've been doing this their whole life. And so my back works hard to get me to where I go. And there's nothing like being able to actually sit down in a chair and relax my back when I'm backpacking. So that has become my very favorite piece of gear. And I don't just use it to sit in. It's the first thing I pull out of my pack. I set it up and then I unload my pack into the chair. So I'm not having to set all my stuff down on the ground. And then I also use it to carry my stuff around. Like when you're going from your tent area over to your camp kitchen area, which, you know, shouldn't be right next to your tent, should be a little bit away from it. And so I just put all my kitchen stuff in my chair and I carry it all over there. So it's kind of a multi-purpose tool, if you will.
Yeah, you're getting your use out of it.
Well, I'm trying to since I have to carry it.
That's good. Yeah, because I know a lot of people might say like, oh, that's a lot of extra weight. I'm going to leave it at home. But it's definitely an item that I've thought about carrying myself.
Well, I've had a lot of back issues. And so that's one that's really, it's necessary. That, and I would have to say my camera would be my next favorite piece because that's really hard when you're without one. If you're me.
Well, yeah. Like you talked about earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. On that trip that I mentioned where I forgot my camera and I had to use my phone. Well, my phone wasn't completely charged and it died on me. So then I was left for one day without a camera at all of any kind. And I was with some friends and one of them, I think she got tired of me pouting. So she gave me her camera to use on the rest of that trip. And I was just so happy. I was in my element once again with something to document my journey.
Ah, what a friend. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, do you give back to trails at all? Maybe volunteering at all?
Well, I am a really big believer in supporting the organizations that are working to keep the places that we love accessible to us. So I don't really know how to work with legislators on important issues regarding wilderness areas, but places like Oregon Wild do, and they're out there doing that on our behalf all the time, as well as the Washington Trails Association. And they also do a lot of trail maintenance. They help coordinate a lot of it that wouldn't be done otherwise, like on the Olympic Peninsula in particular. I think that they're the main organization in charge of that. And places like the Friends of the Columbia River Gorge, they're really working on our behalf against threats like the expansion of oil and coal trains moving through that corridor. And so since I really don't have any expertise in those areas and I can't do that kind of work, I really believe in supporting them. So I'm a member of all of those organizations. And I encourage everybody who really enjoys hiking to realize how important those organizations are.
Yeah, and I noticed that on your website too. So, I mean, you know, it's good too that you put it out there that you're supporting them and kind of give everybody else the idea too.
Yeah, because I think doing trail work is important, but, you know, not being a really strong person, I don't know how much I could get out there and really, you know, swing that pickaxe. But but I can, you know, give a little bit of money to become a member of these organizations and get some good benefits from it. Like the magazine that WTA puts out is a really, really high quality magazine, and it's well worth becoming a member just for that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on the side note, too, because I'm pretty passionate about the actual trail work itself, for opposite reasons that you have. With the size and the, you know, the back issues and stuff. And I can relate a little bit, but, getting out there and swinging, they don't require a whole lot of work. But the thing is, it's also time. I mean, you're out there trying to get some trails in. I mean, you're trying to get other people passionate about the trails, and maybe they could put the time in to do the work also.
Yeah. It's really important that we all take part in doing some of that.
I know that was, Ira Spring and Harvey Manning were kind of the almost you might call like forefathers of the Pacific Northwest with hiking in Washington. And that was their biggest thing for riding trail guides originally was we need to get people out here to appreciate the forests and the trails and the mountains so that they can uphold the natural beauty that's there.
Yeah, exactly. It's important that people get out there and experience these places. It will make them want to save them. I mean, honestly, a lot of people complain about trails being crowded and stuff, but it's a good thing that people are out there hiking because that means that they're going to see these places that we all get to enjoy, and they're not going to like it when someone wants to take it away from them. And they're going to want to do something to try to keep those places wild.
Absolutely. So you're playing multiple parts there. Well, what are some of the hiking or outdoor books, you know, that you might recommend to other readers? Not necessarily guidebooks, but just books about the outdoors.
Well, one of my favorites was a book that was produced by NOLS, which is the National Outdoor Leadership School. Their Wilderness Guide. It's a classic that was originally published back in 1983, but it's been updated, and it covers everything related to backpacking, like how to plan a trip and all that stuff, but also how to deal with an emergency and how to do map and compass skills and things like that. For a book that's more just like a story about somebody's journey, then I really enjoyed Listening for Coyote by William Sullivan. It was his journey through Oregon's wilderness areas. He started at the southern Oregon coast at Cape Blanco, and a big part of his trip was through the PCT, but he cut off the PCT to go through central Oregon, like through the Ochoco Mountains and the Strawberry Mountain Wilderness, and then up through the John Day, all the way to Hills Canyon. And so it's a story about his journey through all of these places with a big, big focus on wilderness and what it means to be wilderness and to be in the wilderness.
Wow, that sounds like an awesome book.
Yeah, it really is.
Huh, I've never even heard of that. I that's why I ask these questions, because I like to get more reading material for myself, so...
Yeah, and he meets some pretty interesting characters along the way.
Nice. What about when was that he did that trip? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. I think it was probably something like 10 to 20 years ago. It's not new.
Oh, okay. If you could hike with one person that you've never hiked with before, they might be still alive, they might not be, who would you hike with and why?
I would probably say I would hike with Erin Saver. She's known as Wired. She's a thru-hiker, and she has this really great blog, Walking with Wired. And right now she's in New Zealand getting ready to do a long-distance trail there. But her personality is just so fun, and she covers a lot of ground. So I don't know if I could keep up with her, but I think she would really be fun to hike with.
Yeah, I've read some of her blogs, and I believe I follow her on social media too. She's very, very interesting. Good answer. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
Yeah, there's a few podcasts that I listen to. One of my favorite podcasts is Sounds of the Trail. I really enjoy listening to that one, and I think that was where I heard Erin Saver talk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a good podcast. I've listened to all those also. I hope they do it again next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so, too.
Do you listen to any other ones?
Well, I listen to yours.
Well, besides mine, yeah.
There's one called The First 40 Miles.
Oh, yeah.
That I've listened to a little bit of. I kind of have listening to podcasts on my list of things that I want to spend more time doing because I haven't that much. While I'm working all day long, I listen to music the entire time I'm working because the sound of the computer hum drives me insane. But listening to words is kind of hard when you're designing. And so I find that music is easier. And so then because I've listened all day long and had my headphones all day long, I have less tendency to want to do that at night. But sometimes I'm working on stuff I could actually listen to somebody talk. And so I might try to do that more.
There's just so much that you can learn on top of what you already know. That's why I do the podcast at all, because I've talked about it before. I'm sure some people are like, shut up, but I do it to kind of like, it's because it's something I want to know. I want to know about Lisa Holmes, you know, I don't know about you. So, you know, it's stuff like that. Like it's something that I get out of it, and hopefully everybody else does too.
Well, yeah, podcasts are great because you get so much more out of it than you do like reading in a hiking book. You know, you're not going to get a lot of these stories out of people. And I love hearing the personal perspectives from people. I love hearing their stories about their time on the trail. It's fascinating.
Well, cool. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, that's the show. Thanks a lot for listening to the Cascade Hiker podcast. Send me an email, Rudy@CascadeHikerPodcast.com. I love the feedback. Also, hit me up on Facebook. North Cascade Hiker is my Facebook page. Twitter, N_Cascade Hiking on Twitter. And Instagram is North_Cascade_Hiker. So pretty simple to find me on social media there. You can also just leave a comment under the show. So I try to give you plenty of ways to get a hold of me. Do so. I want to hear from you. Thanks again for listening to the Cascade Hiker podcast. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could.